Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had last year with Vanessa Patrick. Vanessa is a professor of marketing and the associate dean of research at the Bauer College of Business, the University of Houston. And we are going to be discussing her book, The Power of Saying No. She's written a number of research articles and also has been featured in Wall Street Journal, Business Week, Fast Company, Forbes, and many more. And she has a PhD in business from the University of Southern California, an MBA in marketing, and a BS degree in microbiology and biochemistry. We're looking forward to today's conversation with Vanessa. Well, tell us a little bit about your story, a little bit of your journey to kind of how you've gotten to where you are today.
Sure. Thank you for that. Well, I am originally from India. I grew up in Bombay. I am the eldest of three sisters. And so we grew up in a very close-knit family. And it was a very, very lovely childhood. I was always pushed to be my best and to excel. And I'm very grateful for my parents for their support. And I credit a lot of what I've done to how I was brought up. I've always been studious and always been interested in learning. I consider myself a lifelong learner. So I have always wanted to pursue higher education. And so I did my bachelor's in Bombay and I did my master's in Bombay. And then I was itching for more. And so I came to the University of Southern California in Los Angeles for my PhD. Okay. And I think finding that path to that PhD and having an academic career was just the greatest gift because I was able to find my niche in this world, the thing that brings the best out of me. And that is the, you know, being a professor and being able to write research articles and talk about and teach and share my knowledge with the world. So, you know, in a nutshell, that's who I am. I think my life centers around knowledge. I create knowledge with the research that I do. I share my knowledge with different stakeholders, whether they are students or businesses or even in podcasts like this one. And of course, I read voraciously and I gain as much knowledge as I can. So that's who I am.
Okay. Well, if you were to spend back time and talk to that 22-year-old Vanessa and give her some advice, what advice would you give her?
You know, so I'm a marketing professor and I believe that marketing is all about creating value. And so if I were to go back and advise my 22-year-old self, I would say focus on creating value in whatever you do. Understanding what you bring to the table and focus on creating value in every interaction in anything that you touch.
Good advice. So you've written a new book entitled The Power of Saying No, The New Science of How to Say No That Puts You in Charge of Your Life. Talk a little bit about that. It's a great, and I think I sent you a note and I said, when I asked you to be on the podcast, I said, I'm glad you didn't say no.
But, that's right.
But So tell us a little bit about just kind of your motivation for writing the book and a little bit of the backstory.
Absolutely. So it's my first book. So I'm very excited and very proud of it because it's a big deal to write one book. The idea to write the book stems from my research. So I've done research on a concept called empowered refusal, around which this entire book centers. And I'm guessing we will talk about what empowered refusal is in this conversation. But what I didn't know when I was doing that research was how important it was for people to actually learn how to say no and how hungry the world was for this information. So I wrote those research articles like any academic writes research articles, hoping to make a dent in the world. And this particular set of research articles got picked up by so many media outlets at the time, and everyone was reaching out and asking, so tell us about this insight that you discovered. And that's what sowed the seed to say, this is something that people need. And going back to this bit about creating value, that's really what I wanted to do with the book. If people have a need for something and you have the knowledge, then how do you, in what way or form should you present that to the world? And I decided to write a book.
So talk about, as far as you refer to, and you have three chapters, how it's broken up in three sections, saying no is a super skill. And I think a lot of our audience are kind of new leaders. And I'm sure that, moving from that kind of functional specialty to a leadership role comes a lot of decisions that you need to make. And you've got a lot of things you have to think about differently. But talk about what you mean by a super skill.
Right. So this is a really important thing, because learning to say no is one of those things that has a ripple effect on our entire lives. When we become good at saying no to the things that don't matter and say yes to the things that do, we automatically have better focus. We are making our contributions to the world in a way that's unique to us, that showcases what we can do, that leverages the skills that we have. And so this kind of, the reason I call it a super skill is because it's not just a skill, but it actually is something that transcends across domains. And so those are more functional benefits. There are also other more subjective and emotional benefits. When you become better at saying no, you feel more confident because you are able to now focus on what you can bring to the table. You become better at negotiating for what you want, for advocating for yourself. So there are lots of really positive outcomes from learning this basic skill of saying no.
Thinking back to even in my earlier career, when I was asked to be a leader of a group, a lot of times you feel like you need to take everything on and say mm-hmm. yes to all the requests because you want to prove yourself as a leader. Talk a little bit about that. How to do that? How to navigate that without appearing rude or saying no to your boss that could be problematic? Talk a little bit about that. How to work through that.
So to lay the groundwork for that question, maybe I can just talk about why people say yes to things Sure. that they ought to say no to. When we often say yes when we want to say no, or should say no, for two main reasons. One, because we are concerned about our reputation. We want people to see us as competent. We want people to see us as people who are capable of doing whatever is thrown at us. The other reason we say yes is because we are concerned about our relationships with others. We want people to like us, to respect us, and to think positively of us. So these motivations of competence as well as warmth very often make us say yes when we want to say no. So it is pretty common when you're kind of rising up the ladder in an organization that you want people to think very well of you, and you want a positive reputation, and you also want people who like you. So these are common motivations. And we truly believe and are very anxious about saying no, because we are worried that it's going to damage this reputation and relationship concerns. Now, what we need to realize is that if we keep on taking on stuff that is not aligned with our strengths, taking on stuff that is not our job, taking on stuff that is overwhelming, we are actually doing more damage to our reputation than good. Because we might satisfy the person in the short run, but if we are too busy and unable to do a good job because we've just piled our plate with too many things, then we're going to drop the ball down the line. I call this the house of cards trap. And I very often say we should be thinking about everything we add into our calendar as a new card on an increasingly precarious house of cards. Because the more stuff we add, the more likely it is that it's all going to fall down. And it falls down in different ways. It could be a damage to your reputation, but it can also be it could also result in things like burnout and stress, and it actually affects your own well-being. So the way to do this is to say yes to the things that showcase your competence in a unique way. What you can do, because that becomes your brand, that becomes who you are and what you can uniquely contribute to the organization. Say yes to those things because you are building that brand. And the stuff that's, you know, not aligned with what you want to do in the future, not aligned with your career goals, those are the things that you should learn to say no to using empowered refusal.
So do you think it's gotten worse? I think a lot of people are working virtually. You know, some people have gone back to their offices, but a lot of times it's a hybrid model where people are working alone. And a lot of times probably people don't know what's on your plate and you just keep getting more and more. Do you think this has kind of even made it worse over the last few years that people are not working closely together as far as proximity?
That is quite likely to be a problem because you don't actually see anybody working. So you can't really see someone working late or coming early. It's just stuff being delivered. I really do think that it all boils down to clear communication in the team between, you know, a leader and the people that report to them. Because once you have clearer communication, better reporting structures, much more transparent and shared knowledge about who's doing what, when things are being delivered, then it becomes clearer, even in a virtual space, how much you're doing. And so putting those systems in place, especially in this sort of hybrid work environment that we are in, is something that will definitely reduce the workload. The other thing that happens, and it is so common, is what I call the efficiency penalty. The people who get the work done fast, reliably, and are responsible are the ones who are just going to get more work. Right. And we see this happening all the time. And so that's the other thing that we need to avoid. As leaders, we need to make sure that we are not overloading and punishing the people for good behavior. And that is something that it's hard to do because, you know, you want your work done and you know someone's going to be able to do it. It's pretty tempting to keep giving them more and more stuff. Yeah. But we as leaders need to be able to be fair to the people who are bringing their best to the table and manage that more equitably.
So your second section is entitled The Art of Empowered Refusal.
Yes.
Talk a little bit, unpack that a little bit to what you mean by that.
Let's define empowered refusal. Empowered refusal is a way of saying no that stems from your identity. It's a way of saying no that gives voice to your values, priorities, preferences, and beliefs. So it begins with you. And so when we talk about these three competencies that we need to develop, the art of empowered refusal, we need to begin by developing a sense of who we are, what we care about, what our priorities are, what values do we hold. And so the awareness is the first competency. So we need to develop the awareness of us and where we stand, what we do, how we like to operate. That awareness and that looking inwards is so important as the starting point of this process. With this deepened self-awareness, we can then develop a set of rules that help guide our decisions and actions. I call these rules personal policies. And they are just simple rules that we can set up for ourselves that shape how we respond to different situations. And finally, the third competency is the totality of self, which is the ability to communicate an empowered refusal, leveraging both nonverbals and verbal skills. So that is that middle section of the book is really about how do you develop the skills. And what I found is that when people read the book, they realize that these skills, you know, once you have deepened self-awareness and you set up these personal policies and are able to communicate more effectively, it has a very positive spillover on the rest of your life. You just feel way more in control, you know. This idea of empowered refusal is really about putting yourself in the driver's seat of your own life and feeling, I actually am in control of my time. I do feel that I have some power in what I do and how I do it.
So the word that was coined a number of years ago is FOMO, fear mm-hmm. of missing out. Do you think that's part of what people, one of the reasons why that they don't want to miss out on something, so they're going to say yes to everything?
Yes. So FOMO is obviously one of those things where it's a very human thing to feel that if you say no to something, you're going to miss out on something big. Right. But I think we have to reconcile ourselves to the fact that everything is a trade-off. When we say yes to one thing, we have to say no to something else. And so having a good sense of what your values are, where your preferences lie, what your priorities are, will help diminish that FOMO. Sure. Right? Because so a very common example that we talk about in our literature, especially when we talk to undergraduate students, is, well, you have an exam tomorrow. You have to study for the exam today, but there's also a party going on. You're gonna feel a lot of FOMO for missing that party. But what are your priorities? What are you here for? Right? I mean, the idea is there's always going to be that trade-off, and this is, I think, an essence of being human. When we do one thing, we can't do something else.
Yeah, I think having that framework of making those decisions before you're asked the question, saying, you know, this is important. What's of value to me, and I'm going to hold that definitely as a priority. So the third section of the book is talking about the practicalities of empowered refusal. And it sounds like your book, as I was reading through the chapters, that you definitely have made it so that people can apply it. It's, you know, practical, put it in place. But talk a little bit about that third section.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I wanted this to be something that you can read and then hit the ground running by being able to start implementing this. And so the third section is really motivated by the idea that, well, if we've, you know, learned the importance of saying no, and now have read through all of this stuff on the skills that we need, now we need to take this out into the real world and practice it. And I talk about the domains in which we are likely to do this. One domain, which might seem counterintuitive at the beginning, but as soon as people wrap their head around it, it's really important, which is the idea that we often have to say no to ourselves. That's the essence of self-discipline and self-regulation. And so using these same set of skills to say no to us, once we do, I believe if we can't say no to ourselves, we're going to be not so great at saying no to other people. And we often have to make those choices, right? Do I watch another episode on Netflix, or do I go to bed at the right time? Do I eat dessert after a meal, or do I just, you know, walk away from that dessert table? These are decisions that we have to manage, and there's nobody telling us. This is us telling ourselves. And so a lot of the first part of that third section is about self-talk and the way we can talk to ourselves and say no to ourselves, even when we're really tempted to say yes. The second chapter in that section is one of my favorite chapters. It's really about, so you've learned how to say empowered refusal. You know the skills, and it works for the most part. And you're really happy with that. But you will encounter people who will not take no for an answer, even though you're saying it in an empowered way. And so that resonates with some people, because, you know, there are people who are pushy askers and who want their way no matter what. And so how do you negotiate with them? How do you still say no? Or do you have to just give in? And so in this chapter, I really break down the different strategies that we can use to talk to and deal with these pushy askers. And so it's a very, very practical chapter, because the first thing begins with reconceptualizing these pushy askers as something manageable. And so if you think about most people, most of the books and papers written about difficult people, they call these difficult people things like jerks or toxic. And as soon as you label someone as a jerk or a toxic person, they immediately become more intimidating to deal with. So I move away from that language and I say, think about these people like they are walnut trees. And the reason I use the metaphor of a walnut tree is because the Black American walnut tree is this tree that is has a luxuriant canopy, and it's really big and imposing, and it dominates the landscape. And it does so essentially because it exudes into the soil a chemical called juglone that stunts the growth of every other tree around it. Essentially, the walnut tree is all about itself. It's not about, you know, caring about what other trees want. And so this kind of metaphor really resonates with people. Like, oh, this person is behaving like a walnut tree. I know how to deal with them. And I think it just shifts the conversation to something that's much more manageable. And so how do you deal with a walnut tree? I come up with some strategies in the book. First, how to recognize walnut tree-like behavior. So Mark, for instance, a walnut tree is so used to getting their way that they are practiced at getting their way. So a walnut tree is more likely to make a face-to-face request. We are 34 times more likely to say yes when we are asked face-to-face. That's a staggering statistic, but Vanessa Bonds found that in her research. So a walnut tree will make sure to ask us face to face. We are more likely to say yes in the moment when pressed and pushed for an immediate response. But if we ask for time and take the time to respond and think about our response, we are more likely to come up with a no if it's not right for us. A walnut tree knows this. So a walnut tree will insist on an immediate response. They are also very good at creating a home court advantage, in the sense that they might take you out for lunch and foot the bill, or call you to their home or office, and creating an artificial power dynamic that makes it more likely for you to say yes. So walnut trees are just skilled at this. And once you start recognizing walnut tree behavior, you can identify the strategy that works for you. So you should know this person is going to be a walnut tree today. So I am going to make sure that I convert this face-to-face meeting into an online meeting or to an email conversation, because that means we've just given ourselves the opportunity to be able to say no more effectively, because we've taken out the face-to-face dynamic. Or we have the language in place to buy time. We have the language which says, I need some time to think about this, or let me get back to you. As soon as we know these things, we just become so much better at handling these situations.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm sure people were thinking, okay, who's the walnut trees in my life?
Yes, <So. laughs> everyone in my classes have walnut trees in mind when we talk about walnut trees.
That's great. So I know you continue to learn. You've got the book came out with June, right?
So it's been 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a great accomplishment. I always like to ask authors of books, because I know you read a lot too, besides definitely put your book on the list of books to recommend. Are there other books that you would recommend to leaders that you'd put on their list?
You know, there are so many books that I recommend to leaders, but I will mention a few that I highly recommend. Some of my favorites are How Will You Measure Your Life by Clay Christensen, Atomic Habits by James Clear, Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield.
Okay.
Let me think. Mastery by Robert Greene. One of my favorites that I, or two of my favorites that I always mention. Brag, The Art of Tooting Your Own Horn Without Blowing It. And Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy. I talk about these books in my classes all the time. And I have a whole list more, of course, and a book list to go with that. But those are my top five.
Yeah.
Six.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of those I don't think people have mentioned previous, so that's great. So of work and your writing, now that you're done with this book, I'm sure you're thinking about maybe the potential next round. But outside of work, absolutely. What do you do to recharge?
So I have 12-year-old, so I spend a lot of time with her, but I love to read, and I read a lot of fiction and nonfiction. So just a voracious reader. I love to cook, and I try all sorts of cuisines. So I think my creativity really comes out in the kitchen. I think it's fascinating to be able to, you know, conjure up something from pretty much nothing. I also paint and do a lot of craft. One of my favorite things when my daughter was small, much smaller, was to make hair bands for her. So I had no time because I was a very busy mom. So I'd be thinking of a design and then I'd just run and quickly pull out the glue gun and make something real quick. So I like doing things with my hands.
Okay, great. Well, what parting advice would you give a new leader?
I think it's so important to recognize that you have the power in you to say no to the things that you don't want to do. As soon as you see that you are grumpy, resentful, and unhappy about the things on your plate, you can see that as a sign that you are saying yes to things that you shouldn't be saying yes to.
Yeah. Great advice. So how would somebody learn more about your new book and your other writing?
Absolutely. So I have a website, vanessapatrick.net, which has information about how to connect with me, all the different podcasts and things I've been on, and lots of resources to learn more about me and my research. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn and happy and pretty active on LinkedIn and happy to connect with people there as well.
Great. Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Definitely wish you continued success with your book as well as everything else that you're doing. And definitely look forward to your next project.
Thank you so much, Mark. I'm so grateful.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.